Welcome to Chew the Fat, the first in a slightly new iteration and direction of this podcast. My name is Patrick Hanlon.
And my name is Russell Alford, and you are very welcome to this show, which has been released on the 28th of May, 2021. And it's very nice to be back. This is a bit weird and different because we're not knee-deep in mud in a field, or we're not quaffing some sort of gin in the distillery. We are, as we have spent almost every waking moment of the past 18 months, on our dining room table. Not on it, sitting on chairs.
And starting this podcast speaking to each other eye to eye, but this is obviously a slightly different step for our podcast, but it's still going to have us presenting, and it isn't going to be just us either. So there's going to be a couple of great interviewers every episode, and there's going to be two of those coming up for you in this particular episode.
Yes, we have some really fascinating individuals coming up. We have Bridget O'Hara, who you may know as Bridie's Wine Chats on Instagram, coming up later on, as well as Keith Coleman and Aisling McHugh, the duo behind Roots Project, who are currently based down the road from us in Slane, County Meath, and there's some really great chats with them to come. But in the first of a kind of new feature, I guess, that we're having on this podcast, we have decided there's so much to tell you about the world of food and drink in Ireland, isn't there?
And it's a fast-paced industry. There's things happening all of the time. Sometimes it can be hard to keep on top of everything that's happening. So we are introducing in briefs section, rounding up the key things you should know and the exciting happenings across the island and in the Irish food industry.
Now, the only problem is we didn't want to call it Chew the Fat in Briefs, or more inappropriately, Gastrogaze in Briefs, because I'm not sure that would...
You know. It isn't quite that kind of show.
No. That's the other podcast that we don't talk to anyone about. But we also had another other names. We're going today with Chew the Fat Notice Board, but if there's anyone with some level of creativity inside them to come up with another name, that would be really wonderful.
I had a few. The Snack Box.
I like that.
We had one...
Chew the fat nuggets.
I mean, I'm not quite sure about that one. We also had Chew the Fat Notice Board. So I think for this episode, we are just going to go with Chew the Fat Notice Board. But if you have any wildly creative and incredible suggestions, we would love to hear that at Gastrogaze on all of the major social channels.
First up on this notice board, we are talking about some of the bank holiday boxes that are going around. While many restaurants are scaling back or swerving their meal kit offerings altogether, some are continuing on regardless, including a handful with some specials for the hopefully sunny June bank holiday weekend. One of the OGs from early on in the pandemic, Bujo, is offering a special June bank holiday barbecue box following the success of the Easter special back in April. This barbecue box includes 6 Bujo burgers, 6 smoky hot dogs garnished with pickled pink onions and honey mustard sauce, 2 racks of slow-cooked ribs in a barbecue sauce, plus all of the sides and buns that you will need to make the perfect barbecue. It costs €80 before shipping, but delivery is available nationwide, so snap that up quickly, and you can order at bujo.ie. Meanwhile, one of our favourite food friends and among the most infectious personalities we've ever had the pleasure of having on Chew the Fat, Niall Sabongi of SSI Wholesale and Claw, in conjunction with Carl Whelan of Hangdai, who together have recently opened the Saltwater Grocery in Terranure, are offering a fish-laden feast for the bank holiday weekend alongside their regular seafood suppers, which are still available each week, plus their selection of fresh fish and seafood deliverable nationwide. This feast includes a dozen oysters, a dozen split gamba, 6 Irish scallops on the half shell, tandoori monk fish tails, and a lot of extra sides, breads and salads, all in all costing you €95. Nationwide delivery is available for that, and you can order at sustainableseafood.ie.
It's also your last chance to order the I'm Sure Garden Box. This limited edition fine dining barbecue box from the 2 Michelin starred restaurant in Kildare. The starter box includes the likes of stuffed cerrado flatbread, roasted bog carrots with Saint-Tola goat's curd, and celeriac remoulade. The box serves two people and is priced at 38, and customers can then choose their own meat, fish, or vegetarian additions ranging from 9 to 18 euro, like rare breed pork sausage, pork gel, and halibut T-bone. They're only delivering locally on Saturday, or you can pick up from, I'm sure, at Cliff at Lion. So get your order in for the final week, imsure.ie. The annual Bord Bia Bloom Festival sadly has had to be pivoted virtually for another year. But in lieu of thousands descending on the Phoenix Park next weekend, Bloom at Home returns for a second year and builds on the success of their debut digital offering last year. Hosted by RTE's Miriam O'Callaghan, the live talk series will take place on Sunday the 6th of June and will provide inspiration and advice on how to design and maintain your outdoor space, as well as exploring the physical and the mental benefits of gardening, and I can attest to that as well, and that of course involves growing your own ingredients too. Throughout the day, there will be talks such as urban gardening featuring our wonderful friend Nadia El Ferduasi, the kitchen garden with chefs Catherine Fulvio and Rory O'Connell, and we ourselves will be ending the day with an Instagram takeover and a live cocktail masterclass on the @BoardBeABloom account from 6 p.m. and keep your eyes peeled on our own social media for the specifics on that in the coming week. But for the full details on the Bloom Festival, go to boardbeabloom.com.
And finally, Dick Mac's Pub in Dingle is set to become Dick Mac's Bottle Library as the ever-favoured bar in West Kerry adapts to the times we are in. Chef and author Travis Gleeson, the man behind Dingle Dinners, the fantastic recipe book, has teamed up with Finn MacDonald from Dick Mac's in curating a covetable lineup of wines and champagnes suitable for every moment and occasion. Advice all be on hand to help pairing suggestions. Travis guarantees there'll be no divine teachings, tuxedos, or stuffy shop talk, just shop coats, which is great to see. There are plans afoot for the summer where bars will transition to allow indoor consumption, hopefully, and they will offer a small corkage fee to enjoy some of these exquisite bottles on site. And we, for one, cannot wait to get back to Ondangan and see it flourish in full flow with that unique Dick Mac's atmosphere once again. And if you've got any food news from across Ireland and beyond, you can email us at hiya@gastrogaze.com. That's H-I-Y-A, like hiya.
Hiya.
Hiya. Or you can drop us a message on Instagram or Twitter by Thursday of next week, and we will do our absolute best to include it. So one of the things there in the headlines is about the winding down of a lot of the meal kits going on. And I feel like meal kits and anything that's in a box in a DPD van has very much become our, I guess, topic of interest and of note over the past year, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Our house has never had fewer than, I'd say, 8 large cardboard boxes that we have to dispose of pretty much every couple of weeks.
But sure, we ordered clothes and the girl from Fastway goes, this isn't wine. So like, I think that says a lot about us.
I think this was always going to happen, even though this has been our third lockdown in a row, and
hopefully the last.
But after things began to open up after the previous two, the kit craze still endured. However, I do get the sense that people are beginning to kind of get fatigued by the at-home experience and are really craving that kind of in-person, in-situ experience in the restaurants themselves.
Though, at the time of us recording, the Fall to Ireland guidelines have just come out regarding time. There's a time limit on in terms of 105 minutes, if I remember correctly, in terms of indoor dining, if there's less than a metre space. And there's a lot of rules, and I can see a lot of frustration amongst restaurateurs, bar owners, cafe owners about it. And it's understandable. This is their business. This is their passion. They also know their business, what makes it work, how many people they can serve to break even, especially after being closed for so long. One does wonder, though, and this comes from our own experience. We did put out, two things. We did put out a survey recently about meal kits on our own Instagram account, and the feedback from it was fascinating. And it's the type of things that us two, as you know, two gay men essentially with no children, wouldn't understand in that kind of way, that there may be plenty of couples around Ireland who do have children or who have issues with getting into places because they live in the countryside or whatnot, who still want the meal kits to continue. And there is an appetite. There is an appetite. But then you have to see it from the flip side of, well, if I'm trying to cook for a reduced amount of people in my restaurant, how am I going to have the capacity to sell all these boxes of things and then change from essentially a takeaway operation to an in-house operation for a service? It's understandable to see the reason why it's stopping. It's just in a way a kind of shame to see it stopping.
I don't think it's stopping across the board, no. But there definitely is going to be a decrease in the options available. And I think at the time of recording, operators are planning a potential opening up again and having people coming in and enjoying outdoors first and then indoors, and so they're excited about that. And the people who've been cooped up at home, those places' customers are also excited about getting out of the house and experiencing food again in person. So I think both parties are going towards this excitement of, okay, the kit craze can kind of be kept at home, but I think it will even out over time. I think there really is that audience still there who want that packaged up, eat at home, ultra casual experience, because we were talking fairly recently about how it's a unique experience. It, of course, isn't the same as experiencing all of these places who are offering kits in person. But it also isn't the experience of just cooking at home. It's kind of an in-between, and it's the pace.
Yes.
It's the conviviality. It's the casuality. It's the urgency isn't there anymore. It's the, I can hold off on those cookies until tomorrow. Or, it's actually a huge portion, so I can spread this out over like three meals.
You can also tell which meal kit Patrick is talking about when he says cookies, and you obviously know it's the Kai Dobros
one. Sure
is. But like, you know, actually talking about the Dobros kit, like that's by the looks of things, and actually maybe we'll try and get the guys on Chew the Fat at some point. Yeah. That doesn't appear to be going anywhere, and as we know, this was their plan pre-pandemic anyway. It just got sped up out of necessity more than anything. Then you have Bujo, who are continuing and expanding as well with their space out in Castleknock, that this is continuing because people across the country are like, I'm having a barbecue next weekend, so what am I going to do? I'm going to order Bujo because it's so handy. And the likes of Featherblade as well, and Tomahawk as well. All of these are going to continue in some sort of way, but I think a lot of the, I don't know, I guess like the Altabox has stopped.
Yeah.
Again, the Altabox, which was fantastic, was
straight out there, out the gate.
Absolutely. Now, that has stopped, but has it ceased entirely? I'm not sure. I have a feeling it may come back in some sort of form.
It was because so popular.
And it's so worked. So hopefully it will not be the end of them. And hopefully it's not the end of them purely because at the end of 2019, we did do a thing on 2FM where we described it as one of the hot trends for 2020, except we didn't realize a global pandemic would also be part of the hot trend.
Though also proven correct.
Yeah, for once.
You know, I guess the pandemic kind of helped in that too. But we have always operated in an online world, and we have begun to dip our own toe into the kit craze, and in conjunction with the Happy Food Co, we created two of our own kits.
Yeah, in a really short space of time in the grand scheme of things, I guess too. The first one was our GGFC, or Gastrogates Fried Chicken, which is, you know, after the announcement of our debut book, Hot Fat, kind of all starts to make sense now a little bit. And we'll talk a little bit more about Hot Fat in probably every week from here on out because we're very excited about it. And then our second one was a Gastro Gaze Eurovision, or as we call it, Gastrovision experience box, which went out last weekend and was really, really well received.
Yeah, and I think they both exemplified kind of creating the experience of our home in you, in your homes, and the kind of things that come out of our kitchen in yours. Mm-hmm. And so it had been a great success in our eyes. So hopefully the whole craze isn't quite teetering off just yet.
No,
because there's definitely plans.
And we want to bring back the GGFC box because it was great. And a lot of the feedback that we got from it was kind of at the opposite end to a lot of the, probably with the exception of the likes of Bougeot and Dobros, that it was the easiness of it. It was convenient food, but top quality convenient food. And that was kind of our aim with it.
And it championed producers. Yeah. So yes, it's us on the kit. It's us creating it. It's us curating it. But really the stars of it, as ever, in pretty much everything that we do, it isn't us as the stars, it is the producers.
And it's the producers, everyone from Ballymakenny Farm, Great Northern Larder, and the Smoked Onion Mayo. My God, the Smoked Onion Mayo from Bull and Bluston. So many others who were included in it too. Inch House, were in
Corndale Farm. Yeah. I could just continue.
You actually could just listen to the podcast because almost every one of them have been guests on
they
the previous
sure
episodes of Chew the Fat. But speaking of guests, let's introduce our first guest onto this week's podcast. When the pandemic hit, oh, we keep talking about the pandemic, don't we? Oh my God.
It isn't ever far from our thoughts.
But when the pandemic hit back in March 2020, the sudden rush to go digital was real. Every single day, like clockwork, you'd get dozens of Instagram notifications declaring that such and such is going live, and so many people use their spare time isolating at home to upskill and explore different elements of food and drink. One person who became a lockdown hero of ours is Bridget O'Hara, otherwise known as Bridie's Wine Chats on Instagram. Every Thursday, hundreds would join in like clockwork to appreciate and explore the inherent flavours found in a perfect chosen supermarket wine. Accessible, educational, relatable, and incredibly engaging. Just over a year on, Bridget has continued her public side of content creation, educating, and demystifying wine, whilst privately has begun Virtual Vineyards, an online tuition program which offers courses, events, and tastings for small groups. Bridget joins us now to reflect on her whirlwind year. Hello, Bridget.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Really
how are
good,
you today?
You.
I'm really good. I'm thrilled to be here, so thank you.
Thank you so much for appearing on Chew the Fat with us. We've been obsessed with you, as you know, for quite a while now, for about a year since you set up your Instagram account, Bridie's Wine Chats.
And what a year that has been. Can you kind of give us an overview of how you have been finding that past year?
Yeah, I would love to start you off at the very beginning. Last February, last February I was in Barcelona with my cousins on a girly holiday, and I was doing a triplet Instagram page, and I never really, it wasn't me. And you know, one of my cousins was like, why don't you just do a wine page, you know, like nobody gives a shit about your kids, like least of all yourself. And I was like, oh gosh, what a good idea, and thanks for that gorgeous info, but yeah, you're right. So I was like, okay, no problem, I would set up a wine page. And literally the following week I set it up. You know, it was the beginning of lockdown and I was quite tentative and I was like, god, why am I doing this, you know, what's going on? But like, if you remember, I have been in like a cave of nappies and children for 3 years, and that isn't me by nature. So I was dying to get back to work, so I was like, I'll dip my toe into maybe a little bit of blogging, and that's kind of really where it started, you know. So I set it up on like a Wednesday, and then the following week I came on really nervously to talk on stories, and I was like, oh cringe, what am I doing? And but before I had it, the words out of my mouth, I was like, oh god, I'm dangerous. I was like, oh, I'll just do a live on a German Riesling. And I was going, what have I done? And then I came off and I was like, well, you have to do it now. So yeah, that was it, really, just feet first in. And obviously I think I was very lucky the timing, the mood that was around. People had to entertain themselves at home. They had no choice. I was lucky that there wasn't that many people doing wine lives. And I think I very much was always, because of my restaurant background, I'm always food oriented as well. I don't want to just sit and talk about a wine. So I think people really enjoyed when I started adding in the chef dish, and then that kind of, you know, grew from there. And yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about your restaurant experience? Because this wasn't just, I guess, the, I suppose, the stereotypical, even ourselves, blogger thing of, I like wine, I like food, I think I'll start up this. You have experience. This is your life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I finished my arts degree and postgrad and worked in restaurants, like everyone does, like many people do. Continue to work in restaurants. So I was fortunate. I worked in Le Crevin, Shanahan's, Bang, you know, Le Gouleton, like all of a lot of nice places. But well, I lived in Australia and I really caught the wine bug there. So I came back and I did all the WSCTs and I did my diploma. And when I did my diploma, I was hired by an amazing guy, Simon Tyrrell, who's the Rowan specialist. So himself and Charles Duran, it's so funny. They used to give me like these kind of training sessions, you know, like, what's this? What's that? What's that? And I'm like, oh my God. So, but in you know, in retrospect, I couldn't have been trained by two more incredibly skilled people. So of course, then I was in the wine industry and yeah, it just, I was wine writing, selling. Then I became a sommelier. I did that for a couple of years and I ended up eventually lecturing with DIT in wine. And that was where I went, happy days. This is what I like. I like the education part of it. You know, I wasn't so keen on, I mean, I was getting older and nights are a bit tiresome, you know, in your kind of late 30s. Well, no, I was early 30s. So I just knew I wanted an avenue out of that. But like the wine industry in Ireland is small, you know, there isn't this kind of big scope of opportunities. So I was really, really lucky to even get the part-time hours lecturing with DIT. And then, yeah, of course, I had to take an extended career break. I was actually pregnant and they were like, look, you can continue on lecturing while you're pregnant. But then of course, when I found out it was three, I couldn't, you know. But it's funny, when I started this wine page, I'd say a lot of people were going, well, who's that? Like, she hasn't been around for the last couple of years, but I was in the background.
I think if we go slightly back to the timing thing, I think you exemplified the kind of all of us having to be at home, having extra time on our hands, all isolating and all eager to spend that time kind of exploring other things or upskilling. And I think the thing about you that really grabbed our attention is that you are applying the knowledge to supermarket wines.
I just kind of knew, for me personally, the wine industry can be quite dichotomous. It can be like, you know, filled with those who want to sip away and pool any Montrachets all day every day, and that's brilliant and that is wonderful. But you know, if we kind of open ourselves up, there's a whole, I personally think this all stems from my genuine belief. I think Irish culture and society is deeply changing. And we're not really about, well, I mean, maybe me and my peers and yourselves and such like, we're more into looking for quality wines, story behind it. We want to learn a little bit. We don't all need to be professionals at it. So I knew that there's a whole brigade of people at home that are going, God, I'd love to learn a little bit. And I, for me to include them, I knew I had to use supermarket wines, because if you're going to join in, you want to be part of the whole process and you want to taste what I'm tasting. I don't think that, I'm more of a practical person than a lecturing person. So there's no point in me sitting on a live and talking for 25 minutes about the wine. You know, I'd even bore myself. Like, unless you're at home and you're tasting the wine and you're tasting the flavors, or you're, if I'm explaining texture, you're feeling the texture, or if I'm talking about the finish, you're feeling the finish. And at the end of the day, you know, there are some, there is a whole wealth of supermarket wines that are very acceptable. I never once sat there and said these are the best wines on the market. Mm-hmm. I absolutely don't. And I've had a couple of people who message me and, you know, say, why did you do supermarket wines? And I just explained to them, because I wanted to make it a, you know, an inclusive page, yeah, and not an exclusive page. Like, we have to remember as well that the normal person, Barolo means nothing to them. Chianti means nothing. Chablis is gobbledygook to the normal person. So we have to kind of, it's up to us as, you know, industry professionals to see it from their perspective as well, that, you know, you can't just arrive in and have a couple of terms of knowledge and then throw it at them and expect people to, you know, have any kind of want to join in. I just don't think that that's the way about it. So yeah, I'm sure there were many critics who were like, oh, here she goes again. Yeah, supermarket wines. Yeah, okay. But you just, oh, because I guess I'm, at heart, I'm more about the education.
And I think that was what was so effective about it. And I think that's why, you know, within the year, you've grown to about 14,000 followers at the moment, which is an achievement, such a huge achievement in the world of social media in particular. But you have to also bear in mind the times that we were in at that time. You know, people were not leaving their houses, period. People were going to the shop once a week. They might be where they normally would go to two or three supermarkets. They were only going to one. And if you were saying that tonight we're going to be testing an Aldi wine or a Super Value wine, chances are people were planning their week around that 1 hour on a Thursday night because of that, and they were getting something from it. And I think that that's that was such a great USP of yours. It then developed that you set up virtual vineyards as well. Would you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. And like, full disclaimer, never did I ever envisage me working for myself. Like, it's bananas. I'm not sure if you're the same. So all of a sudden you're in this, I had plenty of people who said, if you did a course, we'd love to do it. And I kept repeatedly getting messages like this. So I was like, okay, maybe a little bit naively, I was like, okay, I'll just do a 6-week wine course. Yeah, sure. And then I knew if I was going to do anything, I was going to do it with, you know, credibility behind it. And I didn't want to just be some sort of kind of cowboy setup, you know. And I only do the 6-week wine appreciation course because I think if you're going to do other courses, I would want to be a WSET. What's the term again? Anyway, it'll come to me in a minute. So I wanted to set this up just to do the 6-week wine course. Then people were looking for kind of one-off events, private tastings, etc. So it organically grew, really. But I definitely wanted to have, you know, branding behind it. And like, even since you guys have done the course, I've added to it and I've added, you know, certain other aspects to it. And yeah, like, gosh, if you told me this a year and a half ago, I would have thought you were crazy. And I'm sure, like many different people who end up working for themselves, it happens organically. And part of you, I'm a big gut feeling person. I'm very, very gut feeling person. And I just was like, yeah, it, what can I lose by doing it? I didn't have to have major investment. I don't have, you know, major overhead. So I'm not a risk taker. So it kind of suited in a way. And yeah, again, that's taken legs and it's brilliant. It's very busy. And of course, I'm doing it all without funding and stuff. So things take time. I'm definitely doing it quite slowly. But yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
You said about the Irish kind of palate is changing over time. Has Ireland evolved from the Chilean and the huge Italians and the full Spanishy types, and is it evolving all of the time?
Like, I think so. And I also think so from working in restaurants for so long. And like, I'm a real people watcher as well, you know. Like, restaurant wine lists 10, 15 years ago were dominated by two or three wines, okay? And that was it. Whereas now, the, you know, people are choosing Primitivos and Nerdvolas and, you know, the Austrians, and people are branching out to, you know, back to German Pinots and stuff like that. There's a much bigger spread. The one thing I've noticed from this particular page is the real passion that people now have for the food and wine pairing, which I didn't think was as... I didn't think it was as big as it was. And ironically, I wrote for food and wine for 10 years, just pairing wines with food. That was my only piece for 10 years. So it's kind of an irony that I've come back into it. But actually, I think it became an angle and a hook for me on the wine page, you know, and it does add depth to your evening. As I say all the time, you can have, you know, your Montrachet with whatever battered fish, who cares, battered sausage. But at the same time, when you get that gorgeous combination, there is nothing like it, you know. So I think that Irish people are most definitely changing. And if we think about it, the French and the Italians and the Spanish, they do it naturally. They do it inherently. Their local wines, their local foods, you know, it's just all organic, it makes sense. So we obviously don't have that vine growing culture. So, you know, we're kind of learning our ways now, I think, and, you know, the benefits of the food and wine pairings and stuff. And I think people are becoming definitely a lot more mindful of their alcohol intake, you know. So that plays into it as well, adding the food with it, you know. I feel an exciting time for the food and wine industry for Ireland, you know, and how, like, you know, the research that's been done and how Irish people spend more per bottle per head, and they think about it, you know. And I guess me and my tiny little Bridie's Wine Chat train is what I'm trying to do, is maybe just teach people how to mindfully drink wine.
Which is a really great attitude and a way to think about it as well. It's an education in kind of two forms, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And to mindfully drink it of, like, well, what do I taste? Or, you know, what am I feeling when I'm drinking it? Am I enjoying it? Do I not like it? Do I want to talk about it with my friend, etc., you know? Mm. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. If and when I ever get back out of these four walls and I meet my friends, I'll be, woohoo! But, you know, definitely to help people kind of build their grow for wine is, you know, little by little, just teaching them how to kind of mindfully taste it and drink it. Yeah.
And on that, after experiencing huge growth in your Instagram page in just over a year, has your audience changed? Has the audience who consume your content evolved over time, and have their tastes changed?
I think so, yeah. Like, I have a small cohort of, you know, people who've been there from the beginning, and like, I chat away to them all the time, and it's lovely, you know, it's really nice. And like, you know, they come back with wines where I'm like, wow, you know, go you, fair play, and stuff like that. I still do get a lot of people who, you know, want, how do I put this, like, they kind of want the beginnings of it, and that's fair enough. New people join all the time, you know, but like, I guess it's a broad spectrum of people. It is, you know, because there's a lot of new people as well. And I sometimes just say, look, go back and have a look at that live or something, rather than restarting again. But then, yeah, I think that the people who've been with me over the last year, definitely, like, the amount of times they'll send me a picture of their dinner and their wine, and it's lovely. You know, it's really, really nice. I've had messages from, like, families where they're like, oh, me and my sons are in Australia, we've done it together, and, you know, we do alive together and make the food, and you know that's nice. It's really lovely to hear that. So yeah, I guess they are kind of, what's the word, I'm about to say taking an adventure, that's not the right word, they are being more adventurous with their wine choices.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think our story and your story is quite aligned in a way, because us two say that we never had a plan whatsoever and everything just kind of evolved and it happened organically. So I guess the next thing to ask you is the future. Have you a plan? Are you scaling up?
So gosh, if I could get more hours in the day, I would.
If only.
Like, a lot of people forget that I have the three little ones at home, so we don't have any childcare, and it was lockdown for years, so I couldn't even get childcare. Yes, my future plans are, it's funny, and I don't know if it's the same for you guys, and I was saying to my friend this morning, there's a lot of pivoting, you know, you're going, okay, I had this in mind, and now I'm like, no, well, you know. So the way I think I would love to see it over the next couple of years is, I prefer person. I prefer being in person. I do. So I will definitely look to do some sort of academy. Mm-hmm. I would love that. That would be like my kind of end goal, is to have that kind of wine academy, you know, food included, etc. That's a little bit way off, but yeah. I think that's where I would be going.
No harm having ambition and dreams.
Absolutely
like that. And what about if you wanted to do some sort of like wine tours around Italy and France? If you ever want to do that, we're very good at travel agents occasionally. we can assist on that. Just before we finish up, summertime is coming along. It's a great time. Well, it doesn't look like summertime, depending on the weather.
Oh, today's nice.
Today is nice. And sure, whenever you're listening to this, it could be a mix of sunshine, showers, snow, hail, sleet, goodness knows.
But tornadoes.
Tornadoes, yes. There's been tornadoes all across the country today. In terms of some wines that you'd like to recommend, or grape varieties or whatever, is there anything to keep an eye out for this summer?
Yeah, we did the sparkling event last month, and I had tasted before, but it reignited my passion and love for it. The Patnat de Uivo, the Portuguese, it's just gorgeous. Yeah. It's like summer in a glass, the bubbles, the strawberries. I love it. Mm. I just think it's gorgeous. And nude wines, green man wines, those kind of independents do it. Mm. White, I have a real thing for Chenin Blanc from the Loire at the minute. Again, because I think there are those kind of really like summer garden wines, I feel, with your lunch. I love them, those kind of honey and little touch of oiliness. Beautiful. Samour, there's a lovely Langlois Samour from O'Brien's that I particularly like. The reds, definitely one of my favourites at the minute, is Runkel Pinot Noir, German Pinot Noir. I think Greenman Wines do it as well. Just gorgeous. So silky and luscious and full of fruit. And yeah, like kind of that very, how do you, little touch of peppery spice, but ideal for a summer evening.
Wow, I am heading out to grab all three of those immediately. I'm drooling here.
Same here. Bridget O'Hare, thank you so much for joining us on Chew the Fat this week.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
On to our next special guests. You too. The Rolling Stones, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, David Bowie, Queen, and REM. You are all very welcome to Chew the Fat. No, I'm just kidding. All of the above, though, have headlined at the iconic Slane Castle over the years. But there is a new headline double act drawing the masses to the County Meath town and putting Slane firmly on the map for a whole other reason. rather than the rock stars on stage, these are the rock stars of the food industry. Keith Coleman and Aisling McHugh are the couple behind the Roots Project, a pair of food creatives who bring such diverse and unique experience to the table. From chefing and serving in cafes such as Fia and bakeries such as Scale to catering their own events and even creating a street food truck of their own. They've also spent time on farms and are now leading the food and beverage operation across both Slane Castle itself and the accompanying glamping, ecotourism and food market at Rock Farm Slane under the tutelage of couple Alex and Karina Cunningham. With so much to talk about and such diverse experience to delve into, I'm delighted to say Keith and Aisling join us now, and they're going to tell us a bit more about their plans in the Boyne Valley. Hello, guys.
How's it going, guys? How are you?
We're very great. Good. Thank you for joining us on Chew the Fat. How is it on the other side of the Boyne Valley there?
Yeah, great. Yeah, the weather's amazing at the moment, which looks promising, like, for things this week.
So tell us a little about what is going on at Slane, because it really does seem like the place to be at the moment.
It's a big operation. So I guess as a bit of a backstory, myself and Aisling moved down to just outside Slane in at Rosemary House in October 2019, and we were kind of all set with our own plans, and then obviously COVID hit and kind of changed things a lot. So we actually ended up spending a year working on the McNally's organic farm in North County Dublin, which was just a godsend, to be honest, like all things considered. And still, I guess, like in the background, we're kind of working away on plans. And then Alex and Karina from Slane Castle Estate approached us to come on board with them to look after everything food and beverage at Slane Castle Estate. So that includes, like, that's both Slane Castle and Rock Farm, the organic farm and glamping site on the other side of the river to Slane Castle.
When you say you had great plans at the beginning of when you moved out to County Meath, what was your vision? Because before all of this, you were working on pop-ups, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's it exactly, yeah. So we, when we were working in Dublin, the plan was to potentially open our own cafe or something more evening-based, with a view to, like, kind of get that up and running and then to make a move out of Dublin. Like, I'm from Dublin myself, like, but Aisling's from Cavan, and it was always the intention to try and get back down the countryside for her. So it was lucky enough that that's what I also wanted. So there was no arguments on that. It was really just we were going to move down and kind of get to know people in the area and then try and figure it out. And kind of as luck would have it, Jenny and Reuven from Eastern Seaboard fame had found us a cottage down here right on the Boyne River at Rosemary House. And then we got talking to the owner, and the plan was to basically run the Roots dinners at Rosemary House and kind of just play that by ear and see how it goes. Something similar to like a Dillis project, just do it over the summer and then yeah, kind of cross that bridge when we get to it kind of situation, you know. That was kind of the initial plans.
And how is our area treating you so far?
It's amazing. Like I think as a chef, like, we're just spoiled with the quality of produce. And it's not even just that. I think like, the quality is there and everyone knows that, but I think it's kind of the accessibility and the community that, like, you know, if I want to get amazing cheese, like, I can just call Michael Finnegan and he'll pop down to me, like, you know, later on that afternoon. And similarly, like, with Mark Jenkinson, who makes the cockatoo cider, you know, everyone is kind of just like a WhatsApp or a phone call away, and everyone is, like, very supportive. It just makes everything, like, so accessible, and it's just really makes like trying to write menus and to work with local produce, like, very easy when it's that accessible, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and on to the next question that I could probably answer ourselves, but you obviously operate as a couple. How are you finding that? Because I could absolutely probably produce a thesis on all of the pros and cons of that. So I'd love to hear of your experience.
Ideally all pros, if you can.
All pros, yeah. It's a great question. It's an interesting one, actually, because like we're also in business with another couple, like Alex and Karina, I guess. And so it's something that we've discussed with them before. And I don't know how it is for you guys, like with GastroGaze, like as a business. But for ourselves, like there's quite a clear line between like where my area is and where Aisling's area is in terms of like the back of house and the front of house. So I think, you know, there's a lot of trust there between us in terms of trusting each other to be able to look after like their own area of expertise. And like there is obviously crossover, like because we run the business together, but I think we're quite, I think we have had to learn to be quite good at creating other topics of conversation just to even break up the, you know, because you could just talk about work all the time, like which I'm sure you guys know as well.
Yeah.
And I think, say, like even this evening, you know, when we come home from, you know, I had a big day in work, like down at the castle doing prep and getting things ready for other projects, and then having to go up to the farmer's market to get that ready for tomorrow. So when we come home, like a lot of the time what we'll do is just grab the dog and just go for a walk and kind of almost like, you know, have a debrief of the day, like while we walk the dog. And then it's like, okay, as soon as we get home, like that's it for the day. Like we don't talk about work. That's I think you just have to be quite regimented with it and to give each other space as well. Like, you know,
that's a really great mentality of once the walk is done, that's it. Stop talking about work. Easier said than done, I'm sure, at some times. In terms of the work that you are doing, we've obviously being locals and actually also being our local market, because I guess you're talking about the time at McNally's, we would have gone quite frequently, but have gone less and less because of the improvements that you've made more and more at the Rock Farm Market. That has only come back in the last couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah, so when did the market close? So I think the 23rd of December. Mm. We kind of did like a load of mini markets there before Christmas, which is really just to coincide with the organic like turkey and organic ham kind of collections from Rock Farm. And then, because it was the first time that Rock Farm had ever had a farmer's market, they weren't really too sure about how things would be in the winter. And I'm sure you're up there yourselves, like in December, and it was cold and dark and, you know, parking was probably quite difficult and the ground up there like may not have been totally suitable to have a market. So we kind of just made a call to one, kind of keep an eye on when the ground, COVID as well, because to try and kind of get it to a point where we felt comfortable enough to open it again, like as a market. Like it is essential retail, but I think like even if you're ticking all the boxes in terms of like the COVID rules, you can still kind of cause yourself quite a lot of anxiety, like worrying about, you know, if you're doing everything right in that regard. So it only reopened on, what date was that?
The
12th of May.
Early May?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that started May. Yeah. It was, yeah, it opened a week before the food truck, 2 weeks before the food truck, I think. So then we just had a big spring clean up there and kind of sat down with the whole market team and with Jenny Glasgow as well, and just kind of put a plan in place, like just to make slow gradual changes like to the hay barn, and just to put, I think when the market opened it was very like pragmatic, and it was like, okay, there's a lot of like produce sitting here on the farm, especially that like it'll go to waste if we don't find an avenue by which to sell it through. And similarly, like for other local producers, like I know Rory and Great Northern Larder started the Great Northern Larder box, and I'd say that was great for everyone. But I think when we had the time to kind of slow down and like look at things and see maybe like gaps in the market, like where we could approach certain producers to come on board, or just spend more time researching other local producers like in the Boyne Valley.
So you introduced there a food truck, and it's this beautiful Airstream in the resplendent grounds of Selene Castle. Can you talk us through your plans for that over the coming months?
I guess much in the same way, actually, that the farmer's market was kind of born out of just necessity. Like that's where the food truck came from. It was literally just sitting down like with Alex and Karina and the team at Selene Castle, and looking at like the restrictions and what we can actually do. And I think That's kind of where the food truck was born from, born out of, because that was, we could figure out a way that we could like reach customers like with food and coffee, and to do it in that kind of takeaway setting. And like, you've been down to the area, like it's beautiful, like just kind of perched there between the distillery and the castle. And it's nice because it kind of takes the focus away from the castle, because there's still a lot of work to be done there over the summer, and to get that ready for autumn and winter as well, potentially like reopening some of the bedrooms there, and there's some other plans afoot as well, which I won't go into just yet. But yeah, the food truck was really just, yeah, born out of necessity. It was a way that we could reach customers like quite quickly, and the turnaround on getting that kind of up and running was quick enough, even though there was some delays. And I guess the food truck as well, like it can be quite difficult when you're a chef and you kind of only actually have like this one sort of this one thing that you can serve food through, because I've had to kind of like rein it in a little bit, I suppose, and try and like save the more ambitious food projects for elsewhere. You know, the courtyard down at the castle is going to reopen as well in the summertime, and there's kind of a few little kind of projects in the pipeline, looking at doing like picnic baskets as well for people down at the grounds, so like they come and collect that from the courtyard and then kind of set themselves up around the grounds and enjoy that. So yeah, there's a few little kind of interesting things like that in the pipeline, all kind of focused around like operating it from the food truck, like as a takeaway style thing with not a lot of service involved. And yeah,
I love the sound of this, and I know the two of us have been talking on Instagram about it, because we dropped down the first day of a food truck being open. Yeah. And
a beautiful day,
absolutely beautiful day. Yes. And
very bravely, I could see you guys walking over, soldiering, and I was like, "What are they doing out in the rain?"
We just wanted sausage rolls. That's all it was. But in fairness, they are sausage rolls to die for, and as we have 100%. Experienced in the pre-Christmas market as well, the other pastries that you to be constructing, those pasties and all that, oh wow, they are out of this world. So hopefully there will be a return of those in the picnic baskets. And it's also important, I guess, to note as well that unlike a lot of, I guess, food trucks as well that are popping up all around the country, you also have at least toilet facilities and picnic tables directly outside, ready to go for when outdoor dining is permitted in a couple of weeks. Isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're just really privileged actually to have the food truck like on the Slane Castle estate. Like, even, you know, to get into, like, if you want to get into the details, like, I suppose the, like, where the food truck is located used to be a VIP area. So we actually have, like, unlike other food trucks, like, we have mains power there, we have like mains water, wastewater, so that's why we have the toilets in that area. Like, it was quite easy to kind of pull all that together, and then because we have like the kitchen is only about 50 meters away in the castle itself, we have like a lot to kind of support the food truck with, like in terms of the kitchen and the toilets, and as well, like even just from our own experience, like going to other food trucks and that, like, yeah, we kind of knew that having the toilets there and kind of trying to create a nice atmosphere of people, like with the picnic benches and to have like, you know, nicely kind of like landscaped lawns and that, like it'll make an impression. Like, and I think we're not just trying to be like a takeaway food truck that you go up and grab something and then leave again. Like, we want people to kind of hang out and like, you know, chill out on the grass and kind of make a day of it, and all depend on the weather, fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll hopefully have loads of beautiful days like we had a couple of weeks back. And of course, there, you mentioned the distillery is there too, and hopefully that will be open up for visitors in due course as well. You mentioned food trucks and inspiration and checking out other ones who, you know, all around the country, and there has been such an explosion. Is there any that you've I don't want to say taken inspiration from, because I think that's always like a
It's like, that always sounds like you stolen your concept from?
No, I don't mean it like that. You're so original, and by God, are you original, and you're so talented at what you do. What I mean to say, is there any that you look up to or admire or would love to take inspiration? I'm just going to say it. Take inspiration from it to a degree.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I think because what we're doing is quite... different, and it is kind of for people who are going to have access to the grounds, and we want it to be like very accessible for people who are going to kind of come in and walk around. It's quite different to other food trucks out there who are just doing, you know, a type of food, whether that's like amazing like tacos or amazing toasties, or so we kind of wanted to have like a kind of a nice range of stuff that we can just make in-house, and it's just kind of like easy for people to kind of grab and go, because we also know that it's going to be very busy during summertime stuff as well, so we don't want there to be like a huge wait for people, and we kind of want to be able to serve as many people as we can, and
as quickly as possible.
I think there's
I don't know if we took like inspiration from food trucks. I think it's almost like we wanted to take a little bit of what we've done in Fia, a little bit of what scale, and kind of just like channel all that through the food truck in a way. I suppose maybe it's more influenced by like maybe cafes, and that could like trying to even create like a mini, you know, kind of cafe through the food truck, maybe, would you say?
If we go slightly back towards the market again, obviously at the start of this you explained how your approach kind of had to evolve or change because of COVID, and I think that's true for pretty much everybody. But have you felt that throughout the pandemic there's been a greater connection between consumer and producer?
Yeah, I think definitely. It's just much more accessible for consumers now to be able to have access to produce that would have only been available to kind of restaurants and stuff before. And I think it's made a lot of people really kind of understand what's in their area and really appreciate that, and be like, oh, I can get like, you know, amazing cheese from just down the road, or amazing cider, or like, and the box schemes, and kind of like, you know, meat box schemes, veg box schemes, like all of that, I think was so great. And I think that people will kind of still be really interested in that kind of going forward, and really kind of champion local produce and producers, hopefully. So
just to kind of round up, pop-ups were very much your forte for that period of time, post FIA, I suppose, before coming to Slane. And one of our last last supper.
Last supper,
we should have called it that. It was a promo day for the Slane Food Circle, but it ended up becoming a bit of a last supper, which you catered for, and it was absolutely fantastic.
This world.
Let's say in an imaginary world, you are organising a pop-up for Friday night. All your other responsibilities are taken away. Tell us the menu.
Oh, that's a great question. Wow. Where do I start? I guess similar to like what you guys would have experienced at the Slane Food Circle dinner. I think we do have plans to host kind of overnight stays accompanied with like, you know, a long table dinner in the castle, and then guests would stay, and then like we look after breakfast the next day, and then even potentially like, you know, there could be a daytime activity, whether that's, you know, going and having a picnic and going to visit some of the producers. So I think the menu would just tie in with that, and would really be like focused on just showcasing like everything that's in the area, like in a very kind of simple way. I think when you could look at the castle and imagine a very high-end like fine dining restaurants operating there, and I'm sure like that'd be amazing and extremely successful, but I think we kind of want to bring things back to basics like a bit more. So, you know, even if it's a case of like just starting off with some clarhead oysters, like, and that's it, and then trying to use as much from the estate like as possible, because we have like at Rock Farm, like we have access to organic Dexter beef, organic like rare reed pork, organic eggs, some veg as well, and then even on the estate as well, like there are gamekeepers, so to have access to game like in autumn would be amazing. And I think for dinners like that, like at the castle, I'd probably be placing more of an emphasis on like the experience for people, that like they're coming together and almost treating the castle as like just one big Airbnb. And I think the food will kind of like have to match that, like, and just be really kind of chill. And obviously like the influence of Slane whiskey there as well, I think would be quite important in creating like an experience like that. So we've kind of done something similar, I suppose, with when we did a nice little Sunday lunch like at the McNally Farm, and that was just a long table like Sunday lunch, and it was a case of like, you know, I wrote the menu like on the day, and basically just threw dishes out of the kitchen onto the table. People you know, had to dig in and had to talk to each other, you know, past the spuds, as it were. And I think a similar experience like at the castle would probably actually be something that I'd love to see.
And we would love to see that too. So if you need any investors to help out.
Oh God.
Along, actually, no, wait. No, we can't. But if you need if you need any assistance with eating or anything like that, we are more than amenable to do that. Because that sounds like a dream. Keith Coleman and Aisling McHugh of Roots Slane, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Airstream at Slane Castle is open every Thursday to Sunday from 10 a.m, while the Rock Farm Slane Farmers Market is open every Thursday from 11 until 4 p.m.
Huge thank you to our guests on this episode, Keith Coleman, Aisling McHugh and Bridget O'Hora, for their time, and thank you, the listener, for listening.
Be sure to subscribe on whatever platform you are listening to us on so you don't miss an episode. And don't forget, you can go back to our back catalogue of episodes since 2018 as well and have a little listen to more episodes of Chew the Fat. If you'd like to support the creation of this podcast, you can visit buymeacoffee.com/chewthefat, and we are on all social media platforms at GastroGaze if you'd like to chat, follow, or submit any news that you think would be great for the as untitled notice
hot
board.
Hot fat nuggets.
Let's call it hot fat nuggets. We'll be back next Friday with another edition of Chew the Fat. But from Patrick and from myself, goodbye and thank you for listening.